Cybersecurity is at a crossroads, and so are the female members of the industry. While progress is visible, the numbers tell a different story. Women's representation in cyber is stagnating, and in some cases, even declining. Why is that happening? What barriers still stand in the way, and what can we do about it? In this episode, we sit down with two powerhouse women in the field to uncover the real challenges, the hard truths, and the path forward. I'm Steve Prentice, and this is the Talis Security Sessions podcast. First up here, Jane Franklin, MBE. You are an authority on issues dealing with information security and specifically the need for better collaboration between genders within the global cyber community. You are recognized around the world for your expertise. You are a brand ambassador, speaker, and author. And in your book entitled In Security, you state that women matter in cybersecurity because of the way they view and deal with risk, different from their male counterparts. So to look back over just the last few years in which enormous change has been the constant, what data or information have you seen with regards to advances being made by women in this industry?
I could be quite cynical. I'm just going to refer to the data, actually. Look, the data says that the percentages of women are dropping. So here in the UK, we've seen a decline from 22% to 17%. And I think IC Squared are now reporting that it sits around about 20 to 24% or 25%. And so IC Squared have been measuring this for absolutely years. And certainly when I wrote my book Insecurity, they were the ones I went to kind of, you know, look at what the data is saying, because I think it's really easy for us to kind of paint a picture of how we feel as opposed to referring to meaningful data. And I think when we're looking at the data, we need to look at multiple sources. And it is difficult for us because there aren't necessarily many multiple sources of data when we're looking at women in cyber, let alone more kind of drill down data. You know, so things like, where are we doing well? Are there any sectors that aren't doing so well? And so on. I don't think that we're doing particularly well. I don't think that we're seeing the investment that's needed in terms of women in cyber. Having said that, we are seeing some improvement from a visible and vocal perspective. We're seeing more women using their voices, more women standing out. You know, I always argue that we have incredible women role models in cyber. We just haven't had so many visible female role models in cyber over the years. So I do think we're doing better in regard to that. I also think that there are some really fantastic initiatives that are occurring. So, for example, the UK Cyber First initiative is doing really, really well. I mean, I looked at the data and 14,500 girls between the ages of 12 to 13 have actually gone through that program. So that's really great because that's giving them insight into some of the work that we do in cyber. I think it's pretty bleak in terms of what's happening, but there are some good things that are occurring and have occurred over the years. So we are making progress in some respect.
It sounds like that Norwegian expression, which translates to, as long as you're alive, you're not dying.
Oh, I love that.
Kate Berekia, Vice President, Deputy General Counsel and Global Data Privacy Officer at Imperva,
a Talis company.
And, I might add, an expert in measured risk philosophy. What are you seeing in terms of progress for women in this industry?
You know, it's interesting because you shared those areas to be thoughtful about yesterday, and it caused me, like Jane, to go look at the numbers. The numbers tell a story. I did, in my mind, have some questions about the numbers, like how are we counting women in cyber? Is it only technical roles? Is it roles that support the technical roles, right? Like, I'm a lawyer at a cybersecurity company. Yes, I have a technical background. Am I included in those statistics? It's just not clear to me. I think there's a little bit of a lack of transparency in some of the numbers that float around out there. And so we have the macro look and the micro look. In the micro look here at Imperva, I feel like we do have really great women in cybersecurity. I don't have like our employee metrics, but when I look around at who I engage with at all levels of the company, I feel that we do have good representation. Prior to our acquisition, our CEO was a woman, right? Like you can't have any more higher female leadership than that. So in my micro world, things feel good. In the macro world, it's harder for me to know, right? Like, as I said, the statistics aren't entirely clear to me. And so when I think about, are there changes I want to see, or are there things that I can do to help in both the micro and the macro? I lead a Girl Scout troop. These girls are in high school. They're going to be leaving for college. And I'm like, okay, ladies, I want you to be prepared for life. Whether it's you're going to be a school teacher, or you're going to work in cyber, or you're not going to college, whatever your future is, you still got to learn to budget. You still got to learn all these things. And giving them the life skills so that if they have that foundation of life skills, when they go off to college or their next step, they have that space and wherewithal to go into a technical role if they want to. Or, you know, when their baseline needs are met, there are more options open to them that they can explore, technical or non-technical.
So we have data that reveal possible progress, maybe not as much as we hoped, and this is in itself challenged by visibility, the kind of data that would give a more expanded peripheral vision of women in the business. And I mean, that would be highly influential, given that every organization is an ecosystem, regardless of what product or service it produces, when you consider all the internal workings of any organization.
I think it's really interesting what you said a few minutes ago, Kate. And, you know, picking up on the quality of the data, the methodology, it's not particularly clear. I think that's really symptomatic of where we are. People will signal, you know, we'll get the virtue signaling, we'll get the interest in, yeah, of course, we need more diversity, more gender diversity and all of that. But when it actually comes to it, when it comes to actually taking action and putting in place some of the things that need to occur, there's just not the interest. You know, and I think really it all begins with the data. If our field really cared enough about it, then quality data, quality research would be done. You know, and I do applaud ISC Squared for doing the work that they've done. And I know that they've tried to modify their methodology to get a clearer picture on the percentages on what's going on. That said, we could do an awful lot better. And I think what you bring up about the macro and micro worlds and perspective is really interesting as well, because I'm a mom, I've got three kids, two boys and a girl, and I feel that I am, first of all, stepping into being a visible role model in cyber. So I try to do what I can in order to improve the situation, starting really with writing my book, speaking all over the world, you know, putting on courses and things like that. But really, in terms of where we are, I come back to being a role model for my family members, for my children, and really equipping my daughter with the skills that I think she's going to need to enter the world as a professional and contribute in whatever way she does, so that she has that grit, she has that resilience, and equally so that my sons see a formidable role model, because I'm choosing to step up and be visible and vocal and go and really create a career how I want to, so that they're seeing that. You know, so just by them seeing that really means that it's not alien to them. That's their world. That's what they expect. It's just like, well, mom's doing it. Why should that not be the case? So they're exposed to that. And in my family is, you know, we're a single parent family. You know, I've been on my own for a long time. So they see I'm the only breadwinner as well. So single breadwinner, mom who's going out there and really making a bit of a noise, hopefully an impact in her field. And that has a really lasting effect on my boys, young men and older men going into the workforce, and also my daughter.
That's a great point. It's the exposure that people have which helps normalize things that otherwise seem mythical or unattainable to them. You know, this reminds me of the stories of people like Mary Sherman Morgan, the rocket scientist, or Rosalind Franklin, who was central in discovering DNA, and Frances Allen, who was the first person to win the Turing Award. Their stories as women in this business, in science, are too seldom heard. Whether people are recognized or not, both of these establish a precedent for everyone else who follows. It's too easy to assume that success stories must always follow a certain gender or racial model if the only examples given fit that exact model. The path to normalization needs scenery that is much more diverse. So, Kate, what other additional barriers to entry have you noticed, whether directly in cyber or, again, related professions like legal? What else is causing obstruction?
So I would actually say there might be two layers of barriers to entry. The first layer would be college, right? University, choice of major, what you're encouraged to do, what's available to you, what's affordable to you in the United States. Obviously, outside the United States, college is a different financial structure, but within the United States, where I'm located, it can be a substantial cost. Are your parents able to assist you or other family members? Are grants or loans available to you, right? So there are financial, economical, and also mentoring barriers to entry at the college level. And even within college, sort of survival. This is a conversation we're having in my house because we're college touring right now so that my kids can see, well, maybe a large university isn't for me, or a small one, or state or private, all of those choices. And the conversations we're having around, okay, well, here's the cost of that university. Here's the majors they offer. What economic return is that going to yield for you as you enter the job market? And my children are fortunate that they have older cousins and they've seen the various majors that they've chosen and how that's leading to various career paths for them, the difficulty or the success they're having in finding a job straight out of college. I have 2 degrees in engineering. My recollection is that in electrical engineering, I was one of 2 graduating women at a college that was at least 50% women. And then in biomedical engineering, we had a few more women, maybe 20, 30 out of the whole class. And my undergraduate school was about 5,000 undergraduate students. So small numbers there. I don't know what those numbers are today. I hope they're increasing, but I think there's still the barrier there. And the second barrier is something Jane alluded to. It's surviving as a parent. I'm fortunate that I have a partner. We've been together, my husband and I, for over 20 years, and I'm grateful for that. But as my mentor, who's a man, trial litigator, as my mentor said, you know, Kate, no matter what, most of the care obligations are going to fall to the woman in the family. And I said to the kids this past weekend, I was like, look, guys, I can't be full-time stay-at-home mom and full-time working mom. So you guys need to manage what you're asking me around those requirements. If it's an emergency, of course, but like, I can't just stop at 2 o'clock because you'd like me to drive you to Starbucks to hang out with your friends. Like, let's live in the real world where I have a job. It is important to our family that I perform that job, and also for my own personal growth. And I think it's the home pressures, and then sometimes it can be a work environment that's not supportive or relatable to those home pressures. And so I have a mentee here, and she's a young working mother. And I'm like, dude, I get it. Sometimes your kids are sick and you set up a nest for them right next to your computer so that you can care for them, but also get done what you need to get done. And so I think the more as individuals we can recognize those pinch points, and the macro change only occurs with a lot of micro changes. And so we all have choices that we can make on a day-to-day basis to try to improve lives around us and those who are coming behind us. How can we build them up? How can we maybe open doors for them that weren't opened for us, or put out a hand? Hey, you're struggling with this. You know what? You've got a big presentation next week. Totally doesn't involve my area of work, but you know what? I've given and received a lot of presentations. Let me review that with you so that you can go out there and crush it when you're presenting to the executive team. Those small things can really help the women coming behind us. And maybe instead of diverting out, they stay in.
Let's look at leadership roles for women, and I'll start with you, Jane. Do women have to lead differently because they are female? Or if you want to place this as an observation rather than as a modal should statement, is there a leadership style that female executives have found resonates better in teams, in particular the cybersecurity community?
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to kind of say women are more nurturing than men, but I don't actually think that that's necessarily the case. I really don't. I think what we really need to focus on, considering where we are from a polarization perspective, my view is it is about all of us now. It is about inclusion. It is about belonging as opposed to that division. For me, it's really about approaching it from the psychological safety and making sure that you are creating environments that are what I call high challenge, high support, so that people feel safe under your leadership, so that you're creating more leaders, more up and coming leaders. You are literally bringing them up with you. It's like, how much fun is that, as opposed to making sure that they remain down and in their place. We don't have leadership. Leadership is not moving towards that command and control anymore. It's moving away from it, which is a really good thing. So we want to create these high challenge, high support environments where people feel really safe to speak up, where they feel safe to challenge, to innovate, to stop and pause, and to contribute. So I really think we need to move away from this. Men are like this, women are like that, male energy, female energy. I would argue that you need a bit of both, and man can have female energy, a woman can have male energy, and you need a bit of both when you're doing a good job of leadership. But essentially, it's really about making people feel safe so that they can contribute and so that behavior changes. A lot of the time, women are criticized for not speaking up, not doing this, not doing that. And really, when you look at it, it comes down to the environment. Do they feel safe to do that? So really, it's about us ensuring that that environment is safe so that we get the behavior that is really helpful towards us performing, because we need performance. You know, when I think about the situation we're in, and I spoke earlier about the virtue signaling, maybe men not caring enough, you know, they say that they want to help and it all looks great, but in reality, it doesn't. The reason why is because we are all really simply surviving right now. You know, we're burning out. We've got more regulation. There's more risk of CISOs and cyber leaders going to prison than ever, serving jail times for not being able to keep up. We have so many attacks coming at us. It is becoming more complicated, and the threat landscape is exploding. So I think whilst we need the change to happen, it is really, really difficult for us. So I think the most important thing that we can do as leaders is actually focus on creating the psychological safety so that we get the behavior that really helps us to do a better job in terms of defending our organizations and, in some cases, countries.
And Kate, same question. What have you observed around leadership in this age?
Yeah, I would say, ironically, perhaps for this conversation, the boss that I had that created the most psychological safety and who was the most welcoming was a man. And he was fabulous. He increased team performance so much, cohesiveness of the team, togetherness, willingness to succeed. So I have been reading a fair amount of Thich Nhat Hanh, trying to find my own perspectives and continuously improve whether I can arrive with an open heart and have empathy, because I think that whether you're a man or a woman, if you have empathy for the other person's position, even if their position is hostile or unpleasant or unwelcoming, it can lead to far greater successes for everyone involved. And I think it's the amount of success you have in fostering women in the workplace is irrelevant of your own gender. It's about how you welcome people. The way you welcome people is up to you.
I really agree. And what that is it's about being a decent human being. And you can argue, well, what is decent? But I think really, you know, I know a lot of DEI initiatives aren't being cut. No, I'm not necessarily in favor of that. But I really do think that the focus needs to be on all And I think it needs to be on human beings as opposed to the polarization of like what specific gender that you identify with.
Or your orientation, all of it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't care your orientation, your identification, your genetic composition. What I care about is, did you show up today? Did you do your best at work? Did you do something that helps somebody else? That's what makes a better workplace. And when we all do those little acts of kindness for someone, it makes it so much better. Like, hey, I didn't have to write this memo for you, or I didn't have to respond to you today. I could have responded tomorrow, but I knew you were sweating. I knew you had this urgency and it was holding you up. So I'll work an extra half hour today so that you're out of your jam. It's that kind of community that builds everyone up.
I really agree with that. And the other thing I would say is, I know, Steve, you brought it up before, privilege. I think we really need to be aware of our privilege that we have. I'll give you an example of that. I run scholarships, insecurity scholarships, whenever I can. And I do a lot in collaboration with Black Hat because I serve on the exec committee there in Europe. And one year I had one young woman who contacted me. She asked for a meeting. We did a little Zoom call and she put her suit on and she spoke to me about the difficulty she was having. She was studying, she was an undergraduate, and she really was finding it tough, not with the work, but actually to afford to eat. It was absolute basic levels. I remember her asking me for money. And, you know, I'm, like I said, I'm a single parent. And I was kind of like, well, oh my God, I've got my own kids to look after. You're not my responsibility. You have a family and everything like that. But nonetheless, I did send her some money. And I didn't know her from Adam. I didn't know if she was genuine or not. I was being scammed or anything. And she contacted me months later. She went through the scholarship, great experience and everything like that. And she contacted me and she said, I'm still here. I continued with my education. I got an internship. This is what I'm doing. Thank you so much. You don't know how much you helped just by providing me that money. And that was to eat. It wasn't even books. It wasn't even a laptop. I know she needed those things. No, but that literally just got her through that month, And it's so easy for us, particularly in a Western world, you know, and I by no means think of my life as being easy at all, but it's so easy for us to forget the privilege that we have and just how much it costs others from different locations in the world to actually get some technology, to take a course. And I know that there are loads of free courses available and they know they can reach out and develop relationships and network and all of that good stuff, which is free. But I think we really have to be aware and in the workplace of our privilege that we have and bringing that perspective to help those who we are working with and outside, you know, the upcoming workforce, so that we are really positioning ourselves as an attractive, dynamic and incredibly lucrative profession that we have, because we are well rewarded by and large in our field. You know, that changes lives for not just an individual, but for families and communities. And we have so much to offer the world. And there are so many other professions that we're competing with, you know, when it comes to top talent. So I think of my kids and I have joked with them and said, you will come to the dark side. I will get you, or we will get you, and joked in that manner. And they're like, no way, Mom, I'm not doing that. And I've come close. We have so much to offer, but we are competing with other fields for top talent that is out there, but that might not be coming through to us because maybe we're not presenting ourselves in the best possible way that we can. Or maybe we have got some issues with hiring practices that are dysfunctional, or maybe we've got cultural issues whereby, you know, certainly we're talking about women here, but women are leading ahead of time. You know, they're not moving through into those managerial positions and they are just saying, can't do this anymore. I don't have the stomach for it. Or I can't have a family and work in this job, which I know many young women are questioning. In fact, I would say many young women, I would say many young people at the moment in any profession are questioning.
My last question is regarding the current culture of toxic masculinity, which seems to be really popular right now. I'm not pointing at any country in particular. It has become popular in many places of the world and inside of many organizations. So I'll just ask you, Kate, first of all, what, in the context of everything you've been saying, when we look through the lens of the current vogue of toxic masculinity, how does this impact your approach to your own career, or perhaps, again, to those that you mentor or that you are a role model for?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I also think it's a really hard question. For my entire life, I used to watch the morning news. And about 3 years ago, the morning news became too much doom and gloom. And I wake up and I'm like, oh, the world's on fire. Got to turn that off. So I'm currently limited to my very, very local news with no national segments. So at least I can find out about the weather and the traffic. I'm not a national orator of politics. I'm not a politician generally. And so the only things I can do are make changes within my own community. So that's where the change will have to come from, right? Because it's not the toxic culture doesn't come from the top originally. It comes from choices individual people made to put the toxic people in power. And so I think we have to figure out what's driving those decisions. Is it a fear of lack of resources? Is the attack on DEI because people feel, a segment of the population feels that they will no longer have a job if others are offered jobs within their space? Because if that's the issue, what we should be looking at from an economic perspective is, are there enough jobs for everybody? If there aren't, why aren't they? How can we create more jobs in a non-wasteful way so that we're progressing business and society as a whole, right? That's a solution to that segment. If we have greater diversity, my group will be marginalized. My husband, I think, sometimes feels that way. He's like, I feel like I don't matter in this world anymore because I'm mentoring people. I'm attending these groups. He's got female mentee and a male mentee. And he's like, but it doesn't matter that I'm a good person because now there's no promotion made available to me. And so I think my husband and I don't want to speak for him, but we're both believers in DEI, Jim. But when DEI is misimplemented, it can backfire, right? And so it's important. I remember I was hiring someone and the head of HR said to me, well, that person's a white man. What are you bringing me? And I was like, wait a second, what? That was an actual conversation, and it turned out the person was a minority in other ways. But it surprised me because I'm always looking at the candidate pool. I'm always looking, but I'm not going to choose a person just based on gender or identity or race because that makes the whole situation worse. And could that have been done at some places? And maybe now that's why there's a backlash, or could people have perceived that as being done, whether it was or wasn't, which is a fault in the messaging? I don't know. So all I can do is my own community.
It is amazing, as you were just saying. I know many people who used to be news junkies who now will avoid the headlines and go straight towards softer social media to look at pictures of trains and things because they need to have something to look at that is not always the same barrage.
A lot of
hoof
trimming videos. And, or
like yeah, yeah. It's the same for a lot of people of a certain age. There's nothing to look at new in the news that they haven't seen for the last 40 years. Corrupt politicians, famine, war.
Right.
You get kind of tired of it after a while.
Well, I think this matters. You know, this topic matters. But what's happened is we've swung the other way. You know, so just as Kate has said, it's been incorrectly implemented. So certain people feel left out. They feel it's unfair. And if those certain people are the majority who have got the power, then we're at their hands, which I think is really where we are now. Those voices are being heard. There's more polarization because they have felt it's not fair and they're being left out. So they're taking back the reins on this and almost going back to not prehistoric times, not caveman times, but former times. And it's important that I think we do, you get what you tolerate. So we cannot tolerate this toxic masculinity, this toxic behavior. I don't even want to put the word masculinity on it, because we have toxic femininity and probably toxic humanity.
Agreed, 100%.
So you get what you tolerate. We cannot tolerate it. We've got to be smart about how we deal with it, and try and make sure that people aren't being left out and marginalized, which is what we have now. And those people are young white males, typically, in some countries, and they're taking back the reins. So it is difficult for us. But also, I want to add to Kate's point, in regard to making sure that you are getting the right person, the best person for the job, technology can actually help us, you know, with this. So in my book, all those years ago, I referred to a company called Applied. I think that's what they're called now. They were called Be Applied, but they're called Applied. And their technology really, it uses blind auditions, effectively. Workplace tests, whereby they remove any marker of your gender, of your age, of your socioeconomic background. We're removing all of that. So we are eliminating our bias. So technology can really help us to do a better job, because at the end of the day, we're all biased. So even though we might think that we're not making a decision based on, you know, our lived experience and our bias, an inherent bias, we may well be. So when you use technology to help you do a better job, it can be really, really helpful, just in terms of getting through to that next stage, and also making sure that you are equipping your organization with a team member who can really contribute in an effective way. That's the only thing that I would add to what Kate said earlier.
We are coming to the conclusion of this episode. Some amazing wisdom and insight. Just wondering if you have any last points, any last observations either of you wish to share.
I would say one for women, and it would be this. Don't wait for permission. You know, actually go out there and design your career in the way that you want. I see too many women holding themselves back. And, you know, when it comes to this particular topic and the changes that we need to implement, it comes from both organizations and it comes from women. And I want to see more women really stepping up and not tolerating as much. If they cannot get what they need in that organization and they've communicated it to that organization and really tried hard to address that, then find another company that does a better job, or go out there and create your own company.
And Kate, yourself, any particular closing thoughts?
I would say for my female colleagues, I'd encourage them to take some time every now and again to say, hey, am I happy with what I'm doing? Is it serving me? And if it's not, what changes should I make to get to where I want to be?
Indeed, the power is with that person, with you, to make that change. Well, I sincerely want to thank you both for your time today. It has been an absolute privilege talking with you both. So again, in just the order that you appeared, Jane Frankland, CEO of Newstart, that is K-N-E-W-S-T-A-R-T. Thank you so much for your insights today.
Yeah, I found it really interesting, you know, what both of you were saying. It was great.
And Kate Berekia, Vice President, Deputy General Counsel and Global Data Privacy Officer at Imperva,
a Talos company.
Same thing. Thank you so much for your insights today.
Thank you. I appreciated the opportunity to be here.
Remember, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe and tell a friend or a colleague or a client or all of them about the Talos Security Sessions podcast. We will be back again soon with another episode and another discussion on the topics that you need to know about to successfully carry on in the business of information security. Until then, I'm Steve Prentice. Thanks for listening.